When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everyone, Rob Guest from football.london here, and welcome to the latest episode of Gold and Guest Talk Tottenham, sponsored by NordVPN. Joining me as ever, it's Alistair Gold. Ali, you well?
Yeah, I am, thanks. Hope you are too. It's been a weird one. It's like no Spurs at the weekend, yet they still managed to bring us some bad news to talk about. Lots of other stuff as well. I thought this was going to be a really quiet fortnight, but actually there's quite a few bits and pieces for us to discuss. In a podcast, I think episode is going to take a slightly different shape this week as well, which I'm sure you're going to tell everyone about. And I'm looking forward to it. It should be good fun.
Yeah, we are going to be doing a Tottenham Q&A towards the end of the podcast. You put a tweet out on early this morning. Some of the listeners have been submitting the questions, so plenty for us to go at. But before that, I think first place to start is Destiny Adogi and the fact that he's now going to be missing the rest of the season through injury. Saturday just seems to be going so well. Things pretty quiet in terms of Spurs. And then it was about 9:45 in the evening. Destiny Adogi put an update on his Instagram account, basically saying he'd be out for the rest of the season. There was a couple of photos in there, you know, the classic footballer's just had surgery when he's in his hospital gown on the hospital bed with his thumb up. And it was the following day when Spurs released their statement on Sunday morning. They said, "We can confirm that Destiny Adogi has undergone surgery to his left quadriceps, having sustained an injury in training earlier this week. The defender will continue his rehabilitation with our medical staff and is expected to rejoin the squad during pre-season." So Spurs have 6 games left on the agenda. There's a chase of Champions League finish. Huge, huge blow given a player of Destiny's quality who's going to be absent now for those games, and leaves Ange Postecoglou looking for a left back.
Unless he plays himself. That's the only other option. You know, he is a former left back. Maybe he fits in there. Don't know whether he'd quite fit the bill for the inverted fullback role. That would require a lot of effort. Although I think I remember him saying back in the day he was quite a kind of a up and down the flanks fit player. He had to do a lot of attacking under Puskás, didn't he? And in his system, I think. So maybe I'm doing him a disservice. Although at 58 years old, maybe not quite got the stamina required to do it anymore. Yeah, it's rubbish. It's a shame, because if you take the season as a whole for Destiny Adogi, it's been a terrific adaptation season in the Premier League. To think he's 21 years old, he's come from a very different league, a very different way of playing, a different system. He's been asked to, he's probably turned up and you know, thinking he's turning up at a club full of Italians, and instead they've all gone, and there's this Australian who tells him, "Oh yeah, by the way, you're kind of going to play as a number 10 as well as a left back." And it's like, what? And he's adapted so well. Of course, he hasn't probably been able to maintain the same levels across the entire season. That's not going to happen for most senior players, let alone a 21-year-old adapting to a new league. But I think he has learned as he's gone on. I had a little look at his kind of disciplinary record. Obviously, got the sending off against Chelsea, and then he got a suspension for 5 yellow cards accumulated. He hasn't, in the Premier League, picked up a single yellow card since that suspension. Not a single one. It just shows that he's kind of taken a lot of what's happened on board. We've seen him in games just growing as the game goes on. I always kind of reference the game at the Emirates where he took on Saka and struggled a bit and just got better and better, and essentially kind of had him really in his pocket in a way as the game wore on in the second half. So, yeah, he's had a terrific season. Really sad for him as well that he misses out on the Euros, it seems, as well, which is a shame because I think he was starting to really work his way into that squad. He'd had 3 appearances. And it looked like he might be able to make a bit of an impact at the Euros as well. So, look, at 21 years old, he's got many more of them hopefully to come, and World Cups and everything. But it is sad. And now you've got me wondering whether there is actually someone that goes around to all the hospitals telling the footballer to put their thumbs up for the photo. It may well be.
They all do it.
They all do it. Yeah, and they always get their relatives around them in like a group photo kind of thing. It's like, look at the pain and misery he's in. Yay! But he'll get better. It is very sad for him. But like we say, you know, he's a player with so much ahead of him, and he's already given so much to Spurs in his first year, earned a new contract as well, which kind of forget about, a big bump, a new long-term deal. So his long-term future is set. This is just a little bump in the road, but just, yeah, real shame. And he'll come back during pre-season as well, by the sounds of it. It didn't seem, I'm trying to remember, what was it, during pre-season? It wasn't like he was going to rejoin the squad in time for pre-season as well. So it looks like, you know, at some point in July, he'll come back. So whether that's in time for the tour or not, we'll see. But yeah, a big shame. And I'm not a doctor, so I had to kind of look up the whole quadriceps thing. And I think we just call them quads normally, don't we? I think that's normally the term for them. Essentially, a group of four muscles in pretty much your thigh, really, that you can kind of have some part of them connects into your knee, part of them connects into your hip. And we haven't kind of really been told exactly what area and where and which of the four muscles. They've all got various, very Latin-y names. But either way, it's got to be serious enough to be out for 3 months or so. That's not good. And it's another training ground injury, which, you know, there's been a few of this season. Although I guess we'll find out more from Postecoglou on Friday and exactly how it happened. I do kind of add a caveat with the training ground ones with like Perisic and Solomon. They were non-contact injuries. They were like freak injuries. So I don't want to kind of make that into a thing. But yeah, it just sounds bad, doesn't it? Another training ground injury. But so who would you play there? Go on. Who's your bet to play at left back?
I think it'll be Ben Davis. After all, left back by trade. So probably makes sense. But Emerson's played at left back this season and done all right. When you're looking at how Ange's fullbacks play, is Emerson maybe the one more suited to it, as he does tend to come inside? Might not be the greatest in that area, but, you know, he gives it a go. Ben Davis, when we've seen him at left back, he basically will try and run on down the wing rather than coming inside. I suppose the other option, and I've done a piece on it this morning, is if you move Mickey van der Ven across to left back. And
yeah,
I think we've mentioned it before on the pod. He does have the qualities needed to play as a left back. Has experience in the position as well. He was having a lot, 15 appearances throughout his career. Some of those were for Volendam in the first team and coming through the ranks. The same for Netherlands under 21s, made his international debut there against Greece, and he came on for 10 minutes or so. I think he's played 8 games for Wolfsburg as a left back, notably got an assist in a 2-2 draw with Bayern Munich. So he does have experience there, but what I probably would say is playing in the left back in Ange Postecoglou's team is totally different to playing as a left back in any other team. So I think it's one of these, it has been new for Porro and Doggy this season, and they have flourished in that role, but that's all come from, you know, hours and hours spent on the training pitch drilling this new role into them. And what are we, 6 days away from the North London Derby? Don't really give van der Ven a lot of time, you know, to adapt to that new position. I think it is one he could do, most definitely, because he does have all the attributes in his locker. But yeah, I think it'd be Davis for me. But if it was to be van der Ven, I think one positive you could take from it is the fact you could give Radu Dragosin a really good run in the team, just to help in terms of his experience before he goes into his first full season in the Tottenham shirt.
Yeah. I think there's merits to all three of the suggestions that you've put forward there as well. Personally, I probably wouldn't want to put van der Ven there, mainly because I think you're taking him out of a key area where he's needed. You know, nobody in the team mops up behind the back line like he does. And I think losing him from that situation, for the sake of kind of crowbarring him into another one, I probably wouldn't. You know, Ange may decide that is the way to go. But I feel like, yeah, like you say, he's played as a left back, but it's very different, I guess, to be to do the attacking element of it, to get to the byline, put the ball in, and the number 10 aspect of the inverted fullback as well. So I do think it would be such a huge shift in what he's asked to do. And then, yeah, he's higher up the pitch. So when the other team breaks, you haven't got that Van de Ven pace because he's absolutely miles behind. Look, he's probably fast enough. He could still catch up, but it's taking him out of an area I think he's needed more. I do think there's definitely, I can understand the idea of maybe putting Emerson there in terms of cutting inside. He's going to go onto his natural right foot. So maybe that's more comfortable for him. But I think, I presume, we don't know yet, but I presume you'd go with Ben Davies because it's not entirely his best way in the kind of that role, the inverted fullback. I don't think we've kind of seen him really flourish in it yet. But if you've got a North London derby and maybe despite not entirely being what Ange wants, maybe having a more solid left back might not be the worst thing in the world for this game. And, you know, I've got a stat for you. Spurs have never lost a home North London derby that Ben Davies has started. Right. So, impressive. You know, yeah. So this kind of idea that, you know, it's Ben Davies going to struggle against Arsenal. He actually doesn't. He's won all bar one of them, which was a 2-2 draw.
What's the stats like for the other way around at the Emirates?
To be fair, no, the reason I say that is because he actually hasn't started that many in recent years away.
Yeah.
It seems like the ones he started have been more at home. But yeah, I mean, Spurs are just rubbish away at the Emirates. So it's like everyone's probably got a bad record in that way. But yeah, you know, the big 3-0 win under Conte, like the season defining one, he was at left back in that. One of the Mourinho ones, I think it was the 2-1 when he started to have fans back. There's like 2,000 fans in the stadium. Was that the Sonny Long Ranger in that one, I think? Or was that the Alderweireld winning header? Or was that the same game? I'm mixing up my North London derbies now.
It might have been the Alderweireld one, because I think that was like April, May time, maybe.
Yeah, it could have been. But either way, Ben Davies was starting. You have to caveat that with that's in a different style of left back. You know, that's playing in a different role. And I absolutely understand that. It's not playing within such an attacking team, absolutely. But I think also, to Ben Davies' credit, Ben Davies, he's been there for Spurs when they've needed him this season. Every time they've asked and called upon him, he's come in and he's pretty much always done a really good job for them, you know, especially at centre-back as well. So I think he's earned this right with everything he's done this season to come in. But yeah, it is going to be a loss to not have Destiny Doggy in there because you've got someone that's so perfect for the system and yet is still learning. And it'd be interesting to see whether Pedro Porro is available or not, because if you're going to have Davies and Emerson, that's suddenly a very different kind of aspect. What do you call it? It's a balance to it. Whereas I think if you do have Porro, then it is a little bit like the old Mourinho way of having one fullback that might stay back a little bit further and the other one then has more license, perhaps. Whether Ange could play it that way, we'll see. But I think Ben Davies is probably going to be the one you go for.
I know some have suggested maybe going to a back three, but that's something we've not really seen on the Postecoglou this season. I think we've seen it on a couple of occasions. Literally at the end of the games, I think the Manchester United one, Dragicin came on, didn't he? Centre back.
So who goes at wing back then in that scenario?
This is what I was going to say.
It's the same problem, really, isn't it?
The issue is, I think you'd probably be able to get away with a back three if you had Doggy and Porro playing. Mm. So you've got attacking wing backs. But if you don't, then surely your team's just a bit too defensive.
Yeah, unless you put a Kulusevski or a Johnson or a Werner there, and it's almost like, what's the point?
But I mean, it's, if you've not gone with a back three over the course of the season, is the North London derby the perfect game to go into when you're experimenting? I don't think it is.
No, I remember when they went, Oh, it was one game, maybe under Poch. And oh my goodness, who was Sonny's best mate?
Wimmer.
Kevin Wimmer came in, and it was absolutely horrendous. I think was it Poch? And he headed in an own goal, I think, as well. And it was like they changed it up to go to this different formation on the day. It didn't work. I mean, Kevin Wimmer actually had a great spell when he covered for Jan Vertonghen when he was out once. But yeah, this one just did not work at all. So no, absolutely don't experiment in a game like that with something that's wildly different for a defence to deal with.
And I think there was one with Sanchez playing it. Was he a right back at the Emirates?
Yeah.
That didn't work either, did it?
Yeah, no, really? That didn't work at all. No, there's been some odd experimenting. Probably the biggest, and it wasn't an Arsenal game, would be Sonny as a left wing back in the FA Cup against Chelsea. That was absolutely horrendous. Yeah. That's why I'm pretty much not a fan of big experiments for big matches.
Right, we'll move on to something different now. It's in terms of the goalkeepers. Looks like Brandon Austin is set to extend his contract at the club. That's something you reported on Friday. His current deal is set to expire at the end of the season. Spurs, I think, have some decisions to make in that area of the pitch, but it does look like Brandon is going to be extending his stay at the club.
Yeah, obviously, you know, this isn't the biggest news of the week kind of thing for most people, but it's kind of interesting in terms of it shows you as well, I think, the homegrown aspect and how they're going to deal with that. We've spoken before about the fact they've got so few club-trained players. If they were to have European football this season right now, they'd only have 3 out of the 4 they'd require of senior club-trained players to put in the squad. So with Brandon, yeah, they're in talks with him, or they certainly have been in talks with him over extending his deal, which currently ends this summer. Both sides seem to be happy with that scenario. I mean, Brandon Austin is one of these guys that you're probably not going to hear too much about or know too much about because you don't get to see him. You know, Spurs have had such an entrenched kind of first choice goalkeeper in recent years. Obviously, Hugo Lloris for years and now Guillermo Vicario. And then they've always pretty much brought in an experienced backup. And then there's always been these guys underneath, the Brandon Austins, Alfie Whitemans, that have always been there. And they're now both 25 years old. And I guess you're at this point in your career where you've got to kind of make that decision. And it's either, do I kind of head off and take a chance, which is a big risk for a goalkeeper. It's different for other positions. For a goalkeeper, you could easily kind of put yourself out there in the free market and then suddenly find, oh no, there's absolutely no spots in any team who need a new first-choice goalkeeper. I'm just going to go somewhere else and be a number two, which is like stepping down to do a similar job. And he has been number two, you know, the last few months. I looked it up. I think I've got it here. He's been on the bench for Spurs 33 times in the last 2 seasons. He's actually been like quite a bit. Lloris's injury last season put him on the bench, and Forster's injury this one as well. So he's kind of there or thereabouts, and he's very well regarded, good shot stopper. I don't think they'd have any qualms about putting him in there if they had to in a game. And I think just for the homegrown angle, it's another club-trained player. You know, you let him go this summer and probably Tanganga goes, maybe Troy Parrott goes on another loan. They're the two other ones that will come back and be considered. And you're ending up having to fill those club-trained spots with underage players, the likes of the B list, which is a complete waste of a spot because they're already registered because they're under 21. Look, I understand there's some will think that, oh, you know, at 25 years old, you should head off and have your own career. But it's a difficult decision. You know, you're in a very secure job at a Premier League club. You're an injury or two from playing Premier League football. He's played at Viborg on loan in Denmark. He's played at Orlando City in US football. I don't think it was MLS. I think it was. Was it MLS at that point, or was it a step below? It might have been MLS. Yeah,
I think it was MLS.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember if it was the second tier. But either way, you know, he's got first team experience under his belt, albeit a couple of years ago. So yeah, if he's happy to stay and the club are happy to stay, don't really see the problem in it. You know, he's not going to be bursting the bank his wages, and just to have him there as an academy product, you know, likely to be kind of third choice, but you never know. He could battle with Forster. He might end up becoming second choice over the course of the season. You know, Forster is, what is he, 35-ish now, 36? He's got to be right up there.
36, yeah.
Yeah, it may be that they eventually swap roles as the season goes on if he can impress. So, yeah, I get it. And then there's Alfie Whiteman, and who's got, I think, a year left. And we see what happens with him. You would think one of them goes on loan. You would think. But again, it's about finding a loan. It's not as easy as it kind of seems in your head. So, yeah. So let's see what happens with that. But certainly looks to be something that will get done.
Yeah, I think it probably is a smart move from the club, given the situation. But for me, if I was Brandon Austin, I'd want to be playing. And I do understand where you're coming from. If you leave on a free transfer, you're taking a huge, huge chance because, you know, a club might not be there for you, or if you go somewhere, it might not work out. But it's, yeah, for me, he needs to be playing. He needs to go out on loan.
Yeah.
And the same with Alfie as well. So, I mean, they're both 25. Alfie's got more experience to his name, I'd say, just following that, what, 18 months or so out in Sweden. Austin, not so much. And, you know, you're at that age, you need to be playing week in, week out. And it's quite clear to see he's not going to get a run of games at Tottenham unless there is, you know, a massive injury problem in terms of the goalkeepers.
I think the other problem is Josh Keighley, isn't it? Josh Keighley's very well regarded, very talented. He's at Barnet on loan at the moment. But I don't think he's been there long enough to be considered homegrown in any shape or form for Europe. So I think he'll need a loan as well again next season. So the options are slim. Yeah, I still kind of go back to it's club trained. I think I can see the logic in keeping him.
Yeah, definitely. Someone else who is going to be on the UEFA list next season, Lucas Bergvall, doing well out in Sweden at the moment before he joins Ange Postecoglou's squad at the start of July. Now you've been keeping track on him. He's been... did an interview, did he, last week?
Yes.
That was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he kind of feels, and he seems very kind of open and honest and forthright in his interviews. They're really good. Despite only being 18, he's clearly not kind of shy and coming forward and saying what he means. And he's saying essentially that he feels like players in the Swedish league, the Allsvenskan, are targeting him a little bit. He's getting a little bit more physical treatment than he had been used to previously. Probably, and in his kind of mind, he thinks because people are thinking, well, there's that lad who's just had a record move for a Swedish player to the Premier League. He's only 18. He can't be that good. I'm going to let him know who I am and giving him a bit of a kick and stuff like that. And he's, he did a little interview where he spoke about that. And I mean, in a way, it's quite clever because it draws attention to it. And you think referees maybe would be a little bit more aware of it and he might get some more protection possibly. But he says, you know, and what's very kind of grown up, I guess, about it all as well is that he said, this is what I'm going to get in the future. This is the Premier League. You know, I've got to get used to kind of getting kicked in a more physical kind of arena, as it were. And I thought that was great. It shows the kind of thing that I think that Postecoglou saw in him, that he's a guy that just is desperate to learn. They had their derby, Djurgården, at the weekend, or one of their derbies against AIK on yesterday, actually. They lost 2-0. And I think you might have mentioned this before, but they did it again by the looks of it. He was playing on the right of the front two in a 4-4-2. Yeah, so he's very versatile. He's played in quite a few positions already this season. His stats are really good for the start of the season. He's got 4 goals and 4 assists in 9 games in all competitions. He's really stepped up since he's got the move, and he's clearly flourishing with it and the pressure and all of that. But yeah, it's... That's quite interesting. As long as they don't injure him. We don't want him injured. No injuries, please, when he's supposed to arrive on July the 1st. But if it does kind of help harden him for what the Premier League will bring, I guess it's not the worst thing as long as there's nothing that comes of it in terms of injuries.
Yeah, I suppose you are going to get a bit of tough treatment if he is probably got the best player in that league. At that age, got a... moved to Tottenham, so he's certainly got something about him, and you can see that from, you know, the various clips what do the round on social media in these numbers this season. So I think he's always going to be a bit of a tag, and yeah, it might well work in his favour because the Premier League is really physical and he's going to have to get to grips with that once he does make his Premier League debut for Spurs. And I think as well, just the fact that he's playing in a variety of different roles recently, I think that's only going to help his game as well. So, yeah, I think Tottenham fans are expecting quite a lot from Bergvall once he does make the move in the summer.
Yeah, what I would say as well, physically, it looks like they're doing work on him. He looks like he's already broadening. He looks quite big. I guess that's the point. If they want him to play as, say, a number eight when he comes to Spurs, then, yeah, you're going to have the engine, but you're also going to have the physique to deal with that too. And we've seen that with Pat Matasar. You can see he's kind of broadening and getting bigger with each passing kind of season as well. But, yeah, I'm intrigued to see what kind of player we get. I think people are going to have to be patient with him, though. Even those around him that I've spoken to have said, look, you're going to have to give him about 6 months, they think, to adapt. But he's going to be some player.
Yeah, so next season, Tottenham going to be in a brand new kit. We've seen a couple of images this week. Well, two different ones to start with. Footy Headlines, the website, I think that's where everyone goes for the kit news. There was an image of a plain white Spurs shirt, a bit of white and navy trim on the cuffs.
It was like a design template thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think they put that was like pretty much, you know, bang on, about 95% accuracy. And then literally the following day, we see another Spurs kit. I think it was actually for sale in one of the shops abroad with navy sleeves, very similar to the 2005-2006 Kappa home shirt. Fair to say it split the opinion of fans. What did you make of it?
Kit stuff always splits fans because it's all down to personal taste, and none of us have the same kind of clothing taste or taste in kits. It's like when the first one came out, which was the kind of more plain all white look with like little stripes on the cuffs. There were a fair few people going, "Oh, how boring! Great work, lads! You know, great kind of mixing up your designs from one year to the next." And then the kind of next one came out with the blue sleeves, navy sleeves, and it was a bit like, oh, I like it all white. You've ruined the classic look. Probably can't win either way. Personally, I preferred the one with the navy sleeves. I did. You know, I do like the kind of shirt being more all white, but just as a one-off to mix it up a little bit, it kind of brought me back to the Martin Jol season when they unfortunately ended with Lasagna Gate and West Ham and all that sort of stuff. But it kind of took me back to those Edgar Davids days, Michael Carrick in the midfield as well, and Keane up front. And yeah, it did make me think of those days. And I quite like that kit. So yeah, it's a one-off season. I think it looks quite smart. I'm kind of more happy to see, I think the navy shorts are coming back, which I don't like the all-white week in, week out look. I think that should be reserved for European big nights under the lights and all that. But I was happy enough with it. I think it's okay. Not that I'm the, you know, the barometer for what's a good football kit or anything. But yeah, it's okay. I mean, they're all much of a muchness. They're all so ridiculously expensive anyway. It's one of those things. It's I don't really buy the kits anymore. Do you? Do you buy an Everton kit each season or not?
No, not really. Too much.
I might get a training ground top sometimes to play five-a-side, and that's about it, really.
But I think you're looking at what, upwards of £70 now for a football shirt. But the Everton ones are like £15 at the moment. They're on sale, so like that's the time to buy them.
Was that in case they go down? Because they're the Premier League logo.
Kit supply is changing.
Ah, right, fair enough.
So yeah, that's why.
It might not go down after the weekend. It was a good result, that.
It was. But yeah, getting back onto the kits. I don't mind that one with the navy sleeves. Like I said, it's something a bit different. And let's be honest, there's only so much you can deal with a plain white shirt.
Yeah, and they always go a bit crazy with the third shirt. The third shirt's always like the third shirt this year has been in a bit of an abomination. It's like people are blaming it for defeat. And I do agree to a certain extent about the, I've been at games and seen that it's kind of blended in with the background and the crowd, and that's not a good thing. But yeah, I'm not sure I would blame it for the performance, let's say, at St James's Park. Spurs were just absolutely garbage. It wasn't really the kit that they were wearing. But yeah, it takes me out. Do you remember when I had to do, I did a piece on the kits about a month or two back, and I had to watch this Spanish young lad that would do the YouTube videos, and you kind of watch it with the subtitles, and he's like incredible expert on getting like information about the kits, and he has a database. And when he was talking about that third kit, he was calling it Kaka, the great Kaka. Essentially, it looks a bit like poop. And that's essentially what he was saying about the kit and how much he hated it. And I couldn't really disagree. I think it's also like taupe haze or something is the official colour. But yeah, I haven't... The last Spurs shirt that I really, really liked was the retro light blue one that they had, the third kit, a few years back. It was about 3 years ago.
With the retro night tick.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I love that shirt.
That was fantastic.
And the irony was, didn't buy it. And it haunts me to this day. Like I say, I don't really buy the kind of shirt. I more buy the training shirts just to kick around in. But to this day, I'm thinking, oh, I might buy one. And it's like, you really struggle to find that one anywhere for a reasonable price either. You think old kits would go down, but they don't.
No, I think that was a really popular one. And I think with the green one, the previous season,
what the Champions League final.
I don't think that was probably, you know, the most popular one when it was released. But all of a sudden, it just becomes iconic because of what happened at the Amsterdam Arena. And I think a few of the Nike ones have been good. But like I said, there's only so much you can do with a plain white shirt. And the official pictures will look a lot, lot better than the ones we've seen once they are released, if that is to be the kit.
Yeah, it's the old cliche. When you see it on them, it always pretty much looks better. Apart from the wetsuit. I never liked the wetsuit one. That was horrendous. That was a bad kit as well. But but then again, that's my opinion. There's other people that probably bought it and loved it. And that's, I suppose, the beauty of these things. But yeah, it would be lovely if just 1 year the kit started to come down in price. Wouldn't it be great? I can't even imagine what it would be like to, I was going to use a bad word there, to be a full kit person, someone that would buy the entire kit. But my, that would cost you, that's like in the hundreds. The shirt, even the shorts are probably cost a bomb now.
I think shorts are probably £30 now. Socks are about 15.
We sound so old right now, don't we? Moaning about the price of kits. But they are.
But come on, if you're buying a full kit, you're looking at £120 plus. Easy. Yeah. Shirts used to be £40. And now £40 is like the price for a reduced shirt.
Yeah. Yeah. Or a kid's shirt, I would imagine. I don't even know if you can get a kid's shirt for that nowadays. Yeah. It is crazy. And especially when there's so many of them, it's like, do you really have to make it so expensive when you've got three different ones to choose from? But hey, it's the modern way, isn't it? It's about milking the most money out of any situation, I guess. That's how it works in the Premier League.
It is. Right, before we get on to our Tottenham Q&A, Ali, do you want to let everyone know about the benefits of using NordVPN?
Absolutely, absolutely. We're talking about milking money. That is certainly not the case with NordVPN because it's something that has proved incredibly helpful for so many people, and it's something that we still get so many messages about week in, week out about people that use it, and especially as we come up to the time when people will start going or booking their summer holidays anyway for the months ahead. And it is a really helpful thing to help you on your holidays. It's something I've used many times. If you just kind of want to while away some hours, maybe when you're traveling or something, and watch things that you couldn't normally watch because you're abroad, you can watch your UK stuff and just switch your device to thinking it's back in the UK. And it does that, and it can help you the other way around when you want to look at stuff from other countries too. And it is, you know, it's the fastest VPN in the world. There's no buffering, no lagging with NordVPN. You can stream your favorite shows anywhere in the world without your bandwidth throttling. And not only that, but the outlay on the NordVPN is a subscription is cheaper for you in the long run. And that's because you can purchase, let's say, streaming services or bookings from other countries at a much cheaper rate. So, for example, we're just talking about booking your summer holidays. If you maybe wanted to book your flight from the other country rather than booking it as if you were booking it from England, all you have to do is set your device to thinking it's in that other country, and it could be a cheaper flight for you. So it means that while you're paying out for Nord, you can be saving money overall in doing so. And there's a whole host of other benefits from signing up to NordVPN, so why not give it a go? To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/goldguest. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support our podcast whenever you subscribe to them. The link is in the episode description box in case you just missed it there.
Right, let's start on the Tottenham Q&A. There's quite a few questions in, so I think we'll just pick them randomly. You going first up, Ali? I'll pick a question for you.
Go on then, go on. What are you going to give me? You're going to give me some really tricky one, aren't you?
No.
By the way, we are actually doing this randomly. You know, there is no set list here. I think we're both just doing the same thing, going into my tweet and looking at the replies and just grabbing one out of it. A bit like a lucky dip.
Right. First question then from Visigan. Sorry if I pronounce your name wrong. I think it's right. He's curious whether the stadium's commercial activity would be able to offset the financial implications of losing out on the Champions League.
Okay. Well, obviously you'd prefer both. I'm sure they would. But of course, you know, Spurs are in a situation now where, you know, that stadium is a cash generator. It is. So in the last set of results they had, I know this because I wrote it today in a little piece. Their revenue, of course, was a record one, £549.6 million. But within that, £227.7 million of that was from commercial revenue, which is, that includes sponsorship, merchandising, that's all the non-football events that go on at the stadium as well. So, yeah, the money is kind of rolling in from that, and they're looking to increase that as well, to up the number to potentially 30 of those events a year rather than the 16 they're allowed right now. So, yeah, I wouldn't say, it's difficult to say it offsets it, but like I say, in an ideal world, it would be on top of the Champions League money that you get as well. But certainly, I think the best way to put it is, Spurs are going to be less impacted of not getting a Champions League spot than another club. Let's say, like Chelsea this year. Chelsea obviously having a nightmare with their financial fair play stuff. They're in a bit of bother. They really could have done with Champions League qualification this year to help kind of offset some of their issues. Whereas for Spurs, this is kind of, there's other ways around it. So yeah, no excuses for not spending a decent bit of money this summer. Right, I've got to pick one for you now. Harry McBride asks, with Lo Celso not getting enough minutes and potentially looking to get those elsewhere, do you think there's a new creative style player Spurs will try to replace him with to challenge Maddison, or is that player already within the squad?
He might already be there. Lucas Bergvall next season. Alfie Devine as well. Then he needs a big pre-season because the end of his Plymouth loan spell's not going to plan. And there's Dejan Kulusevski as well, who can play in a central role as well. So there's certainly options there. I think everyone will be hoping it's Bergvall who can step up, and looking at what he's done out in Sweden so far, you know, last season and this season as well, I think Tottenham have a really exciting player on their hands who, you know, can play in a variety of roles, and he has played in a central role at times this season behind the striker. So, you know, maybe it's him who can push Maddison over the coming years.
Yeah, it's a good shout. That's a good shout. I still think they'll have a look at options in that position. But yeah, like you said, there's a few there that can develop into something.
And
yeah, I think so.
I think there's other priorities, though, in the transfer window before you're looking at that position. But yeah, I think so. It'll be one we'll have an eye on, but I think the player might be there already.
Well, that's it. Right. You don't want to block the path as well. You know, you don't bring in Lucas Bergvall and then say, oh, yeah, by the way, we're signing another player right in your position. So yeah, I agree with that. Go on in, what you got?
One from Tottenham Tales. Which of the academy prospects, if any, do you think will be part of the first team squad next season?
Ooh, that is a tough one, because the difficulty with answering that is that if a good loan comes in, you've got that decision to make on actually, even though they're probably ready to be a part of the first team squad, would you rather they get minutes week in, week out somewhere else? You know, I would say there's a group of them. You know, Jamie Donnelly is just having the most ridiculous season. He's just doing better. And the goal he scored against Man U at the weekend with the under-21s was just sensational. If you haven't seen it, look at it. And look at the pass that he does before the goal as well. So, yeah, in my ideal world, I think I'm looking at, just to answer the last question, I'm looking at Jamie Donnelly having a chance to maybe put in his claim for that, because he's probably been the most creative player at the club this season. You know, if you're looking at all of the different levels, he's just been ridiculous. So I would put Jamie Donnelly in there. I mean, if you're going to drop down another level, kind of age-wise, you've got Mikey Moore. Mikey Moore's had a kind of a strange season in that he's been incredible for the under-18s, and he's just got goals and assists galore, like ridiculous amounts. But he's also had probably the first two kind of serious injuries I think he's had in recent years. He had a bad one on international duty that kept him out for a few months, just as I think he was about to go into the under-21s. And he had another ankle ligament injury for the under-18s when he came back that's kept him out for a little while, but he is back now. But what he's done, earlier in the season, he was called up. He was going to be with the first team for a couple of days. I think he ended up being with them for about 3 weeks. And this last week, just gone, he was meant to come for a day or two, and they impressed the coaches. They kept him all week to train with the first team. So there's a player there who clearly they've got an eye on. Whether next season, I mean, turned 17 in the summer, he'll sign his he agreed a 3-year deal, which will kick in the professional aspect of that this summer. Yeah, whether they see that as a little bit too early or not, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, maybe getting him on the preseason tour could be a good chance to kind of let him have a prolonged period with the team in that kind of environment. But yeah, for me, in terms of the, if you're looking at creative types, you've got Jamie Donnelly and Mikey Moore. If you're looking for a striker, Will Lankshear is having a terrific season. I would probably like him to head out on loan. They turned down, they had a lot of loan interest in him in January, but I'd like to see him probably go out and get a loan, get some senior goals under his belt. And then at the back, you've got Alfie Dorrington. And there's other players kind of in and around them all as well that can have a development spurt. And I know, you know, a lot of people like Santiago as well. It's a difficult one. I would still go for Jamie Donnelly, I think, out of the crop. It's whether we're including Alfie Devine or not, or whether he's still part of that group or not now. I'm intrigued to see what happens with Alfie, because is Bergvall going to be an issue for Alfie Devine? I kind of feel like he is. I think he is going to have to maybe go out on loan, unless the club-trained element, they just feel that they need to be around the squad because of that, perhaps. I mean, what do you think?
I think with Bergvall, he's got to adapt to, you know, life in England, Premier League football first, because he's going to be totally different from what, you know, he's used to in Sweden. I mean, surely Championship League One, you say, well, I'd say Championship yeah. going to be better than Swedish League in League One, I don't know, in terms of the levels. So,
yeah,
with Bergvall, he might not be a player who comes in straight away and makes an immediate impact. He might be a bit of a slow burner, one you've got to have a bit of patience with.
But it can go the other way, like Delhi.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Delhi coming from, it can completely like surprise you.
Of course it can. I just think sometimes just needs to be a bit of patience. But what I would say is Tottenham do have two very good players on the hands going forward, and hopefully that will bode well for the club in the future.
Yeah. No, I agree. Right, what am I going to give you as your next one? Let's have a look. We kind of answered that. It was a question about Van de Ven at left back. So sorry, Alex THFC3, because it's quite similar to what we spoke about. It was an Everton. That was just a pure Everton question with no Spurs related. I can't ask you that really. There's some interesting ones. Okay, sorry, it is Everton related. I was looking for an Everton one that had more of a Spurs angle. So Scott G asks, what Everton player does Guesty think would be the best fit for Spurs? And it's not saying that you want to sell them, it's just who you think would fit into the Postecoglou system.
Onana, maybe.
Yeah.
Who you can have if you want.
You said that earlier today. What has happened? Why have you decided that he's not the one?
I'm not his biggest fan. To be honest, no. I think there's very talented player in there, but I just don't think ever gone to see that at Everton.
Why not?
I don't know if it's the system or what, but for a player of his qualities, who has been linked with a number of clubs, in Arsenal, Barcelona recently, he's someone who should be, you know, dominating the midfield, making a big name for himself, but he doesn't. You very rarely see him, you know, impact things in the middle of the park. I can probably count on one hand the amount of like standout games he's had. Remember one last season against Arsenal, he was incredible, but he's never got anywhere near those levels since. And I think Jamie Carragher was actually speaking about him on Monday Night Football 1 week ago, and he was saying basically he doesn't know what he is, whether he's a holding midfield player, does he get forward, does he get involved? The only thing he's seen him do is, you know, try to lift the crowd. That's all that he's seen him do when he plays for Everton. Yeah, that trying to lift the crowd, that winds me up so
it
much.
It didn't lift you, you mean?
No. No, so he does it every game. It's like, concentrate on your own performance first. I think there's a good player in there. I think he'll just be at another club.
So you're saying he's more Basuma second half of the season than first half of the season?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, not quite fulfilling what he should be. Okay. Yeah. All right. So essentially your answer is have a player I don't want anymore.
I think there's clearly a player in there.
Yeah.
It might just be needs the right club. But okay. I've not seen enough from him for me to think he can go and do it consistently at a top club.
Okay. Interesting. I'm sure representatives of Onana will be in touch soon to let you know their thoughts on that. Go on, Em, what you got for me?
One from Adam James Harris. Who would be your ideal number 6 and number 9 signings this summer?
Oh, well, I'm not sure Onana's now going to be my number 6 after that glowing review from you. Difficult one. I'll start with the number 9 one while I'm thinking of a number 6. Number 9... I mean, you know, ideal's a bit different, isn't it, to kind of realistic? Because, you know, in an ideal world, Ollie Watkins would be incredible, but he's never going to leave Aston Villa at this moment in time, and there's no reason for him to. Or Isak at Newcastle. Again, we spoke about that in the last pod. He would be absolutely sensational in the front of this. Number 9. I mean, I like Ivan Toney as well. I think he would score a ridiculous amount of goals in this system too. I mean, the one everyone's talking about is Gyökeres, isn't it, at the moment? And yeah, I would probably put him in there. What's his kind of price tag? He's got a release clause, hasn't he? I'm sure someone said that.
His release clause is, I think, 100 million euros.
maybe not what I was thinking.
Yeah, so I think it's about 80 million. He joined from Coventry for around 20 million. So Sporting, if someone pays the full release clause, will make a huge, huge profit. But I mean, how often do you see release clause activated when there's so much?
Yeah, but he certainly is the thing at the moment. I mean, you always kind of speak about how you're kind of shocked that no one picked him up after his time in England, aren't you?
Yeah, brilliant for Coventry. Scored a number of goals last season. As you know, they got to Wembley in the Championship playoff final against Luton. Really powerful player as well. I think he's just an all-round good striker, good hold-up play, uses strength well. And this is probably the transfer that, you know, Brighton maybe got wrong. Because Brighton did sign him from Sweden. I think it might have been the same club. Bergvall, was it? Bromma Podrykana?
Bromma Podrykana, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's where he was from. And they had a couple of loan spells away from Brighton. He only played a couple of games in the first team. He's probably like the one that got away from them, really, given the high success rate of all the other players who've done well. But yeah, I think he'll go on to big, big things. I can't believe no one took a chance on him last season.
Okay, well, I'll go for him for the number nine then. Certainly his goal stats are just ridiculous this season. He is having a hell of a season. Number six is a bit of a more difficult one, really, in terms of, I feel like number six is maybe going to be someone that they'll go out. It'll be like a real data signing. It'll be someone that can do a bit of everything that they need in the Postecoglou system. Obviously, they've been heavily linked with Ederson at Atalanta. And it's a funny one with him. Depending on who you speak to, is like whether he is a natural number six or not. There's some people that say, well, no, he's a bit more of a number eight as well because he gets up the pitch. And he can kind of play either role. I quite like the look of him. So I'll say Ederson for that role for now, but I would say, I was just looking up his goal stats. He scored 7 goals this season from that position as well. So he does know where the net is. Looking at the games, he does kind of bounce around between a defensive role and sometimes a number eight kind of box-to-box role. But maybe that's in Ange's world where there are no sixes or eights. Maybe that's what you need. But I feel like maybe that number six role is going to be a player that is more a data-based one, which people are a little bit more surprised at. It maybe comes out of left field. We'll see. But so I'll go for them. Ederson and Gyökeres. Well, I've got a final question for you.
I agree with Gyökeres, and I would number six, João Palhinha at Fulham.
Oh,
I think he's incredible.
Yes.
Really, really good player. Adapted really well to the Premier League, but the only thing I'd say, 28 years old, turns 29 this summer, huge transfer fee. Does it really fit for Spurs?
It's a statement. It is a statement. I knew there was someone I completely forgot. It was him. Yeah, and it was someone in the back of my mind. I was thinking it's a London club. Who is it? And it just didn't come to me. That was why I was making you talk about Gyökeres, so I could kind of think who it was. Okay, what have I got from you? Mark Inman asks, considering how poor we are defending corners and how strong our upcoming opponents are on attacking corners, I remember seeing that. Their stats are very high on that. Do you think there's any chance we would have been working on these over these 2 weeks?
You'd like to think so.
I'd hope so.
Arsenal are top for most set piece goals this season.
Something like 16,
19, maybe.
It might be 19 now. Yeah, it was a couple of days ago. I looked.
Yeah, they're really, really impressive from the set pieces. And you'd imagine they're going to get a few corners and free kicks in dangerous positions. I think that'd be very close to the top of the list in terms of the training, because they can win a game from a set piece. So I think you've got to be doing your work on the training pitch, and given Spurs struggles in that area recently, I think that's something they will have been doing.
Yeah, right. Should we do one more each then in this Q&A? What you got for me?
One from Sev. With the 20 best teams in Europe not being in the Europa League next season, do you think it's actually a better option for a developing Tottenham team?
Oh, it's a really good question. It's a great debate. I've seen a few people talking about this in the last week, and I've seen journalists with completely opposing articles writing about this. Some saying that it's a good thing if Spurs were to not get in the Champions League. Some people say, no, you need to be at the top. I can see the benefits of both. So whenever I say benefits, I'm so used to going into NordVPN, I thought I said it. I can see the benefits of both. I personally would love to see Spurs in the Champions League. I know there's this kind of line of thinking that if they're not ready for it, all of this, I think you make yourself ready. I think you do. If Spurs get in Champions League, I think they ensure someone like Postecoglou is never going to allow them to be in a position where they start next season shaky and can't take on the best teams around. But I also agree that, with the teams not dropping down into Europa League next season from the Champions League after the group stages, it is a more winnable competition. I mean, isn't there... I saw a stat, it might have been Dan from Standard possibly wrote it, I can't remember who it was now, that, like, isn't it the bulk, or if not all the teams that have won it or certainly the bulk have been teams that have dropped down Europa League over the last.
Yeah, it's usually Sevilla, isn't it?
Yeah, it's someone that's dropped down. So, yeah, I mean, look, I'm a Spurs fan, born and bred. I'm starved of silverware and trophies. I haven't seen one in so long. That, yeah, I can absolutely understand the logic behind it, but I still want to see Spurs at the top table, I think, competing with the best. And, you know, it's not like Spurs can't do it. They got to a Champions League final when they weren't actually playing their best football that season. It's all about the draw and the way your team plays in these specific matches rather than, I guess, consistency. So, I prefer Champions League football, but I absolutely understand that it's not the end of the world if they get Europa League football at all. You know, they might end up with Conference League. Who knows how the last six games go? Or it might end up with nothing. But I think that would be quite tricky to do, wouldn't it, now with the gap? But we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, there's some really good teams in the Europa League.
I'm not saying it's a walkthrough kind of thing, yeah.
I mean, a couple of seasons ago, it was when like the teams from the Champions League dropped into it, and there was like Juventus, Barcelona, Manchester United, I think Rangers as well were in it. It might have been the season Rangers got to the final. I'd probably say the Europa League ties were better than the Champions League ones. Some of them.
Yeah, that rings a bell, yeah. Yeah, it's a difficult one. Either way, I'd just love to see Spurs back in European competition. We've really missed it this season, and the lack of games. I mean, they've played so few games. I'd love to know the last season. It's probably one to look up for us. The last season they played this few games in a season. They've had European competition for, 19 years? Or was it less than that? Or 14 years? I can't remember what I wrote now. I wrote that ages
back. Probably early 2000s. Looking at probably pre-Martin Jol.
Yeah, he was the first. He kind of got them back in it. I think George Graham got them into the Intertoto Cup? But yeah, certainly Martin Jol took them back into it. I think it is. That's a long time. Right, last one then. Nathan Stum. It's an academy one for you. Bit Ange/academy. Why do you think there's been a lack of opportunity given to the academy players this season? Surely with injuries and a general lack of form during the season, the likes of Donnelly, Iago Santiago, Dorrington, etc. could have been given a real chance.
Tough one.
Nice, easy one to end, isn't it?
Yeah. Because, I mean, there has been a number of opportunities this season where you maybe think, give Jamie Donnelly more of a go. Handful of appearances, final few minutes, which is good for his development, but I think everyone want to see him play more. Maybe it's just the case of managers just don't want to take a risk with them. Maybe.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. It's very difficult in your first year, I think, when you're trying to establish a style. I do wonder whether the young players come in a little bit further down the line with him, perhaps. I don't know in this scenario. It's a little bit different to the other clubs. And whether he sets out his stall, sets out his system, gets all of the senior players doing it, then the academy, it all kind of filters down, and whether then he can drop them in a little bit more easily or whether it's too big an ask or not. I must admit, I am slightly disappointed that we haven't seen players like Jamie Donnelly get more game time. He's done well whenever he's come on. He's actually played really mature little cameos whenever he's come on. And there was definitely kind of periods earlier on when we were both thinking, you know, he was putting Eric Dier into the odd game or playing two fullbacks in the centre. And you're wondering, like, at that point, you had Ashley Phillips or Alfie Dorrington kind of in there as well, could have come in. And I guess it's one of those, it's an old cliche, but at the end of the day, I guess he sees them in training every single day and he knows whether they're ready for that level or not. There's a lot of excitement around young players and under-21s football. And sometimes, perhaps without the realisation of how big a step up it is, but then I guess it's the old adage, you don't know unless you try them. I definitely think there could have been a little bit more game time given to such players, especially when the other ones haven't been performing at certain times. But also, maybe it's just part of the process.
Yeah, I think it's just giving them a chance. I think I'll always go back to Marcus Rashford at Manchester United, 2016. I think Louis van Gaal had a bit of a striker shortage. I think Ashley Fletcher was ahead of Rashford in the pecking order. Ashley Fletcher's gone on to have, like, you know, a decent career or so in the Championship, but if he was fit, Rashford probably wouldn't have been given the chance. And it's one of these, you just have to take an opportunity and give them a go and see if they can take it with both hands. I mean, look at Kobbie Mainoo this season.
Yeah.
Incredible. In the England squad already, probably going to go to the Euros.
This is it. I mean, we spoke about Mikey Moore earlier, and if he does go on the pre-season tour, if, that's a big if, you know, he's still got to play under-21s football, but you never know. He could just dazzle, and you know, you've got to protect players like that and guide them carefully along it, but you never know what happens if you put them in the scenario where they sink or swim.
Yeah, I think a handful of youngsters will go on pre-season tours, as is always the case, and Alfie Devine did really well on pre-season season, really well. So there'll be opportunities there, and, you know, fingers crossed they'll be able to take them.
And I'll be missing a few players as well, won't they? With this pre-season tour with the Copa America and Euros and all of that, definitely.
Right. I think we'll call that a day on today's Tottenham Q&A and also the podcast. We'll be back maybe the end of the week.
Yeah, I could do a pre-North London Derby one, couldn't we? Yeah, why not?
Yeah. If not, we'll be back early next week to reflect on the North London Derby and then also look ahead to another London clash against Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. So in the meantime, just keep with us at football.london for all your latest Tottenham news. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/goldguest. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support our podcast. The link is in the episode description box.